May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. You may be seated. So if you were to take a Greek New Testament, I'm sure you all have one somewhere in your house. If you did, and you look at this passage from John 5 today, you'd say, first of all, this is Greek to me. The second thing you might notice is at the bottom there are a lot of footnotes, and you have an expanded version of this reading, which really unpacks the legend behind the pool of Siloam, of actually Bethesda, or in the Greek, Bethesda. So I don't know if our Bethesda has this feature or not. We should investigate this further. But as the legend goes, you hear the man say to Jesus, well, when the water is troubled, I can't get into it fast enough. Because what they believed was that this pool become turbulent when an angel would fly over it, and the beating of the angel's wings would stir up the water. And the first person to get into the pool while the water was being agitated by the beating of angel's wings would be healed. So here's this guy who's been here for 38 years. He's never been first because he can't walk. And people are selfish, brutish, and so nobody ever thought of helping him out in 38 years. 38 years, this guy has been in this particular location, which as I envision it is really rather nice. The porticos of Solomon, I imagine him lying on a marble floor, leaning up against a Corinthian column, filigree with all kinds of artistic endeavors and artwork. And so he's in this really nice place. He's got his place. Probably no one will take his place. And here he waits year after year for a chance to get into the pool. I'm not even going to try to imagine his sense of personal hygiene. I can't imagine what he's wearing for 38 years. Was he put there as a teenager? Was he already fully grown? Are his clothes too small for him? Does he depend on the kindness of strangers to do everything for him except get him into the pool in time to be healed? These are really actually legitimate questions, and this is a great text for doing a certain kind of prayer or meditation where you imagine yourself in the scene as the man or as a bystander or as Jesus. So I just ask you to file that away, tuck it into your Greek New Testament at home, and when you get around to reading and perusing this with all the margins of the notes at the bottom, you remember what an opportunity for prayer that you have. What defines this man? Well, the people around him define him. He's a hopeless case. You probably know this person. You see him not lying by a Corinthian column, but usually on the median strip at an intersection that you frequently drive past, and you try not to make eye contact with the person with a cardboard sign, crudely lettered, that says, I'm a Vietnam vet, I've lost my leg, I can't work, can you help me? And you will feel an impulse to help, or to awkwardly avert your gaze, or to start up a conversation with somebody else in the car, or no one in the car. You can pretend like you're talking on the phone, the Bluetooth connection, anything but make eye contact with a person who is imposing upon your personal space with her or his need. It's an awkward moment. I don't know that human nature has changed dramatically since the man, the Pool of Bethesda, who was there for 38 years, who may have become virtually invisible or part of the architecture, an invisible person. So the others around him who encountered him have defined him or made him invisible or rendered him so by their occasional attention or none at all. That's how others define him. How does he define himself, do you imagine? Well, he has a little bit of a victim mentality. Oh, Jesus, nobody helped me out. I've been here for 38 years. I can never get the water in time. And if Jesus were a different kind of person, he'd say, snap out of it. Knock it off. He's such a whiner. No, Jesus takes a more positive approach, profoundly. Says, do you want to be made well? Well, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't? Can you imagine somebody being asked that question? By anyone, much less a person who might have a certain aura of energy about him. Who wouldn't say yes? It's possible that he could have said yes and not really meant it, because he has become accustomed to his state. His expectations have been chastened and lowered by a generation of disappointment. It's good not to get one's hopes up too high, because then one never has to deal with that added pain to one's situation. But also, as humans, we become attached or habituated to a way of seeing ourselves. So not only does he have to overcome the outward definition of himself, and you know that is a very powerful thing, don't ever discount it for a moment. How others see us affects how we see ourselves. Oh, very much so. No matter who you are, how easy it is to have your equilibrium and self-concept dismantled by an angry child, by a person at work, by your boss, by a relative. Not only must he overcome that, but his own inner sense of attachment to who he thought he was all those years. That is not something easily accomplished. Or if you're a person today who has lost the ability to walk and has become rehabilitated, there's a certain mental resistance to learning to walk again. One has to learn to walk again. It's not just a psychomotor event, but it's a mental one, an emotional one, to begin to trust oneself again, to be able to walk on one's own power and his own steam. So he has that to overcome, and something about the connection that he experiences with Jesus enables that to happen. Was there some magic of physics and science at play here? Was it psychoneuroimmunology? Was it the power of positive thinking? We don't know. No one knows that. We only know that Jesus posed the question. We don't know necessarily because the scriptures do not intimate this to us, that he did anything further than pose the question. Perhaps it was just a question of Jesus' genius for timing. He saw someone that was ready to be changed and transformed, and he posed the question, and the man said yes. Jesus perhaps did nothing else. He picked up his pallet and he walked away. That's a miracle, even if so-called laws of science were not abrogated or arrested. But we do know, you and I, that the mind is a powerful thing. But to get the mind to change to the degree that it did to enable this man to walk is by any standard miraculous. We don't need to resort to magic to say something extraordinary happened here. Now the last thing that we're told in the gospel reading, and it's really the most important point of it at all, is that it was done on a Sabbath. And Jesus, of course, was going to run afoul of the religious and political establishment. And eventually he would do this enough that it would precipitate a series of events that would lead to his death and what John would call his glorification. But what we have here is a foreshadowing of the power of a person to participate in the resurrection of another. This really great sequence, him really said it all. You and I have this as Christians, as Christ living in us, we have that ability to foster transformation. The water of life welling up within us, overflowing. Can you imagine? Are you comfortable with that? It's not necessarily as daunting a prospect as you might expect. Bishop Stephen Charlson, retired of Alaska and formerly dean of the Episcopal Divinity School, has a nice blog on different social media platforms, and he quoted this study saying that it is important to look homeless people in the eye, that it promotes health and well-being. So if it's the guy by the pool of Bethesda, it's important to look at him. Maybe Jesus was the first person that looked at this guy in 38 years. Maybe it was simply the power of human regard. Resurrection from within and without, overcoming inner resistance and attachment to one's identity, to be someone you've never been before, is a scary prospect. Think of the times when you had an opportunity to change the direction of your life. How easy was that for you? It's scary. Safer to play it the way you've always played it. So that's just a simple human habit. But also, again, there's the power of how others see us. I have an example of that in my hip pocket. I looked it up because I thought it'd be fun to share this with you today if you didn't know about this already. There's my Greek New Testament right there. How many of you know who Tupac Mosley is? Tupac Mosley, not Tupac Shakur. That's like the dead rapper. You should listen to Tupac, by the way. Great rapper, genius. Even if you don't like rap, the man has something to say. Tupac Mosley was a teenager whose family became homeless when they couldn't afford to live where they lived any longer. And so the whole thing was couch surfing. And he's an African-American young man, as you might imagine. His parents were probably big fans of Tupac, named their son after him. So while he's homeless, this young man had a 4.3 GPA out of 4. How they do that in some school systems, I don't know. An A-plus GPA, and he's accepted to the college of his choice. He wins $3 million in scholarships while not having a permanent place to live. And of all things, he's interviewed on Fox News. I'm sorry. I hope I defended no one with that smirk. So, in a system that is class-based as ours, some would say class actually trumps race, and in a system that embodies a certain preference for white people, this young man was resurrected from an old life to a new one. He was able to see himself as someone that could succeed as a student and in a vocation when everything is stacked against him. There's a lot of embedded in our social structure. You know this, systemic racism. He overcame the exterior resistance of him being somebody other than what people saw him as, a young man of color, and his own interior attachment to who he was. Somebody must have looked at him and saw him. Maybe it was a teacher. I hope that it was, because I know I've had that experience too. When a teacher saw me, it changed me forever. That's a story for another sermon, which I may get a chance to preach to you before Kurt gets back. So ask yourself, what is it in your life that freezes you in place? What internal resistance do you bear that disables you from seeing yourself as a new person in Christ? Or what is it in you that is attached to an old way of being, or to not seeing yourself as one who can bring the waters of life and transformation to another, as Jesus did to this poor man? Take up your pallet and walk.